From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
We went to Cuba. We recorded a record. We had heard that there was an embargo. What embargo?
Busting the embargo against Cuba. As tensions increase over the Elian Gonzalez case, a look at how hip-hop is uniting Cubans and Americans. All that and more on Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! Welcome to Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman. The distant Miami relatives who refused to hand over Elian Gonzalez to his father will probably get a letter today telling them they no longer have custody of the child. This according to the U.S. Justice Department. The U.S. Deputy Attorney General said a letter would be delivered as early as today telling the relatives that custody for the boy had been transferred from his great uncle, Lazaro Gonzalez, in Miami to his father, Juan Miguel Gonzalez. This news came off the AP wire late last night from Colombia, where 21 unarmed residents of a small Colombian town have been shot to death by suspected right-wing militiamen. Witnesses say men in camouflage uniforms drag the victims from their homes and kill them in front of their families. The massacre happened in a small town in a cocaine and oil-producing region near the border with Venezuela. The region has seen other bloodshed as warring factions fight for control of so-called war taxes on coca, the raw material for cocaine. Human rights groups say paramilitary groups have the informal approval of the military, wealthy landowners, and drug traffickers. On Sunday, Peruvians will go to the polls to elect a new president. Alberto Fujimori is striving to avoid a runoff election in his bid for a third term. Critics nationally and abroad are questioning how far he'll go to ensure another 5 years in power. Days before Sunday's vote, pollsters say the leading challenger, economist Alejandro Toledo, is breathing down the president's neck. And with neither expected to win an absolute majority, the outcome could be determined in a second-round vote. Fujimori's opposition has expressed concern that there will be insufficient supervision of vote counts in remote rural areas high in the Andes and the Amazon jungle, where pollsters estimate 10 to 15% of voters live. Advocates for gay rights are praising a New Jersey Supreme Court ruling yesterday that lesbian partners who raise children have the same custodial rights as any parent. The court unanimously ruled that a lesbian who helped raise her then-lover's twins was a psychological parent with legal standing akin to the biological mother. The court granted her visitation now that the couple has split up. Last June, a Massachusetts High Court ruling granted visitation rights to a lesbian who helped raise her ex-partner's son. By contrast, in California, New York, and Florida, state courts have ruled within the past year and a half that lesbian ex-partners are not entitled to visitation rights with children they helped nurture. Ethiopia can avert a major famine if food supplies to critical areas in the southeast are increased, this according to a senior Ethiopian government official. The Ethiopian prime minister last week criticized the international community for ignoring signs of looming famine in Ethiopia. In total, the Ethiopian government has appealed for 800,000 tons of food for this year. The Ethiopian deputy commissioner said part of the problem is that stocks at the government's emergency food reserve, to which donors contribute, have fallen. Nawaz Sharif, ousted as Pakistan's prime minister in a military coup in October, was convicted yesterday of hijacking a commercial airliner, sentenced to life imprisonment rather than death, and ordered to forfeit all his personal property. Sharif's crime was not an ordinary hijacking, at least as most of the world understands the term. No weapon was used. Sharif was not even aboard the aircraft. His crime was to issue orders, which he later rescinded, telling ground control to refuse landing permission to a Karachi-bound airliner, sending it out of the country. The plane, according to the pilot, then ran low on fuel, and the lives of everyone on board were endangered. Among the 198 people on the plane was General Pervez Musharraf, who came to power that day in a coup. He's the leader that President Clinton visited with just last week. NATO troops in Kosovo wounded a Serb when they fired on a crowd outside a monastery where moderate Serbs had fled to escape retribution for joining a multi-ethnic governing body. In Serbia, fire destroyed an independent broadcast facility. The incident came amidst a President Slobodan Milosevic bid to silence foes. And Russia should be suspended from the Council of Europe unless it immediately ends the war in Chechnya. This, according to the human rights body, Moscow's delegation walked out. Meanwhile, at least one Russian soldier is dead in a fresh Chechen rebel ambush. And that's some of the news at this hour.
Llego a puerto, voy para Mayarín. De Alto Cedro voy para Marcané. Llego a puerto, voy para Mayarín. El cariño que te tengo te lo puedo negar, se me sale la babita, yo no lo puedo evitar. Cuando Juanita y Chan Chan en el mar servían arena, como sacudí el jibe, a Chan Chan le daba pena.
You may be very familiar with this. It's the Buena Vista Social Club, a compilation of traditional Cuban music put together by American musician Rai Cooter, featuring musicians such as Compay Segundo and Ibrahim Ferrer. But you might not be as familiar with this.
Que impuso y que se pega, y cuando llega no despega, pega, pega lo que puso el ruso en el discurso que Compay Segundo puso entre tus cejas.
Ahora la distancia queda.
Si de mi lengua estoy viviendo y calmando mi fiel tristeza, ¿de qué forma quieres tú que yo detenga la sangre de amor y patria que me cobre por las venas? Generaciones viejas y nuevas, de corazón, sangre y pulmón.
Allá lejos, donde el sol calienta más, olvidé mi corazón.
De ella ni lo intentes, todo el tiempo está en mi mente, la tengo presente, ¿entiendes? Me habla el corazón que no me miente, hermano, flotando ando, pasando la mano, mano sobre el mapa de este mundo, y desde lo profundo de mi corazón siento nostalgia, una extraña sensación como añoranza de esta distancia que se interpone, que regresaré bien se supone, y eso me pone el hombre más feliz por un segundo, ya lo cantó Compay Segundo, y yo de nuevo escucho el quejo de mi gente chico, bien te lo explico, cubano 100% prototipo.
Me arrancaré el corazón.
This is Chan Chan, and the group is the Orishas, and they're part of a growing number of Cuban hip-hop artists that are becoming known outside of Cuba. Their first release, called A Lo Cubano, has become the third best-selling CD in Spain. I'm Amy Goodman, and today I'm co-hosting the show with Maria Carrion, senior producer of Democracy Now!, who has just returned from Cuba. She spent time in of Cardenas and also time with hip-hoppers in and outside of Havana. Welcome, Maria.
Hello, Amy. It's great to be with you. Well, the hip-hop movement is really a new revolution in Cuba. It has really begun to form bridges across borders, particularly with the hip-hop movement here in New York City and throughout the United States. About 5 years ago, a group of hip-hop artists in the U.S. and Cuba organized a rap festival that has become known as Black August. It's a two-city concert. It takes place in New York and Havana, and it brings together hip-hop artists from both countries. It's a celebration of hip-hop as a revolutionary cultural art form. It's a forum for artists to address issues such as racism, police brutality, and political prisoners. It's really beginning to flourish. I think this is the fifth year that they're doing it. And we also see other demonstrations of these relationships with a new hip-hop compilation. It's the first, looks like the first ever produced in the United States, and it unites some of the message rappers of Cuba. These are the people who really are concerned about issues like prostitution, sex, and tourism. It's people who are concerned about the perceptions that police have of young black men in Cuba, and they're expressing these concerns through their music.
And Maria, while you were in Cuba, your brother recorded in Alamar, which is the community where, sort of like the equivalent of the South Bronx, at a place called the Swimming Pool, the word coming down in Cuba of Patrick Dorisman being killed. And this is what happened at the hip hop scene there that night.
No es cosa que lo haga, que se ha hecho otras veces, que hace poco murió un negro haitiano.
Well, they're saying that they just got word that a black Haitian and a Haitian American was killed by the police in New York City. This is Anónimo Consejo, one of the major Cuban groups.
And they ended by saying hip hop revolution.
This is a song that's called They're Looking for People Like Us, They're Looking for Suspects Like Us, and it's a song about racial profiling, particularly by the police. They dedicated this song, which was the first time apparently that they were performing it publicly, to people being killed by the police here in the U.S., particularly the Dorisman family. Well, we're joined right now by one of our guests today. His name is Miguel Carlos. He's a record producer here in New York City, has put together the first compilation of Cuban rap. It's called En Cada Barrio Una Revolución, is that right? In each neighborhood,
well,
a new revolution?
It's actually the Cuban hip-hop all-stars.
The Cuban hip-hop all-stars. And talk a little bit about what it took to put together this this record, how you came to record it, and how you've sort of gotten around the U.S. embargo to do this.
Well, actually, I had two partners, one Cuban-American and the other guy, American like myself. And we had heard that there was this hip-hop scene burgeoning in Havana, so we went down in July and brought down the first ever small hip-hop recording facility to Pablo Herrera.
We should point out that Miguel Carlos is not your real name. Why not?
Well, I'm also known as Money Mike.
Well, what about using your real name?
Well, in terms of that, there is the Helms-Burton Law, which prohibits trade with Cuba, including producing music down there. But we got around that by traveling through Mexico and also by mixing in another country, which we're going to do. It sidesteps the embargo somewhat.
What did it take to record this these pieces, and where did you record them? What studios did you use in Havana?
We recorded at actually one of the largest studios in Latin America. It's called Abdala, owned by Silvio Rodriguez, who's a singer-songwriter of a lot of fame. And it was actually quite an exodus going there, carrying down tons of equipment and tape and all kinds of stuff, and coming down to hot, steamy Havana in August for an incredible experience.
Tell us a little bit about the first cut that we're going to play by Bajo Mundo, which is the name of one rap group. It's translated by Low Life, and it's called The Vagabond. It's about Marielitos.
Right. This song basically talks about one guy who leaves Cuba in the Marielito exodus, and basically it's his fate in Miami to become a drug dealer and eventually to die in the streets.
Oye, ¿cómo la loco? ¿Cómo está? Me dice que te mira.
No voy echando.
Sé, pero con el son ese.
No tengo más lugar.
Estaba acá, ¿no?
Voy echando, voy a hacer mi vida, tengo mi destino.
Eso es candela, coño, se te pide eso.
Candela, soy fresco.
Ya tú sabes, cuídate, mi hermano.
Te dejo, ¿viste?
Nos vemos fresco.
Mi tema de alerta para los que se van. The only way my motherfucker land. De acento cubano, por naturaleza terminó mi vida donde mismo empieza.
Mi tema de alerta
para los que se van. It's the only way my motherfucker land. De acento cubano, por naturaleza terminó mi vida donde mismo empieza.
La historia de un bellaco cundió su destino primo. Hombre recio que por necio equivocó el camino. Mala espina quiso entrar y demostrar su mente tan divina. Matón de esquina, quien puso ideas tan mezquinas. Era mi socio en el negocio, gran Pepe Santana.
This song talks about leaving Cuba and moving to Miami. Basically, it says, "Termino mi vida donde misma empieza," means I ended my life where my life began. And they talk about the land of dreams and opportunity as just being a disaster.
Explain who the Marielitos are and why this is such a significant part of Cuban-U.S. relations.
Well, in 1980. The port of Marielito became an exodus point for many, many Cubans who were trying to get to Miami, get to Florida. And basically, I guess Castro opened up his jails and let anybody go who wanted to at that point. But it became a defining moment, I guess, in Cuban history.
Donde mismo empieza.
Tú sabes que el dinero aquí solo se gana con un cañón, mi socio, con la suerte o con la fama. Prefiero andar como capones junto a sus matones, mano, pistola en mano. Hizo saber a la barriada que llegó un cubano. Se cuenta historia donde duermen glorias con su mito. Que prototipo.
Y que mirado mate un tipo, oíste.
Van 12 años contando relatos viejos.
Amy, I wanted to bring into the conversation Pablo Herrera. He's a Cuban hip-hop producer, one of the few, if not the only one, in Cuba. He's also a poet and a linguist, and he comes to us from La Habana. Pablo, could you talk a little bit about what it takes to produce hip-hop in Cuba, and a little bit about the growing hip-hop movement in Cuba?
Well, how you doing, Maria? It takes a lot to produce hip-hop in Havana. I guess that for me, it's been a major task to undertake, in the sense that I have to actually, you know, put all my senses to work and make this happen in the best way possible. First of all, for me, it takes a lot because I don't have all the equipment that I need just to put this together. Plus, once I get the equipment that Miguel Carlos brought to us, was a lot to basically just to figure out the equipment and use the right music and use the right samples and start making that. And then I guess that for the other reason, I think that what makes it hard is that there's a market in Havana that hip-hoppers and rappers are actually trying to be keen to, which is sound in a certain way particularly familiar or similar to the United States sound of hip-hop, say New York or West Coast. But then again, if you produce that, then you're actually missing to produce hip-hop that sounds like Cuban hip-hop. So the process of experimenting to find that new sound is kind of basically being slowed down by the reality and facts that people want to hear something that still sounds American and still sounds kind of, you know, hip-hop, but it's not really completely Cuban because they're used to that sound already. So
Pablo,
my
Herrera,
biggest task...
We have to break for stations to identify themselves, but when we come back, we're going to come back to you as well as a rapper from the group RCA speaking to us from Alamar just outside Havana, where a large hip-hop community resides. Pablo Herrera speaking to us from Havana, and Miguel Carlos in the studio with us here in New York as we talk about this hour, busting the embargo. You're listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman, and co-hosting with me today is Maria Carrion, producer of Democracy Now!, who's just returned from Cuba. There's a great deal of focus on the Elian Gonzalez case, and will Elian go home to Cuba? But where there isn't the same kind of focus is on the embargo, which the U.S. imposed against Cuba 40 years ago. And today we're talking about something that, embargo or no embargo, is taking place, and that is communication and culture going back and forth between the United States and Cuba, with a little help from some friends doing some actual material technical busting of the embargo. Maria?
Well, Amy, while I was in Cuba, I got the chance to speak with Nahanda Abiodun. She was a member of the Black Liberation Army and was charged with helping Assata Shakur, also from the BLA, to escape from a New Jersey prison. She went to Cuba about 10 years ago. She has 32 counts here in the States against her. And next week we'll be playing the full interview in which she talks about why, what her involvement was presumed to be, and why she went to Cuba. But this week and now, we are going to hear about her involvement in hip-hop in Cuba. She is very involved in the Black August project herself, and this is what she had to say about it.
Black August is a collective that started 3 years ago, I want to say, 3 years ago, where we use hip-hop to talk about political prisoners, to try to get support for political prisoners, and also to get support for Cuba and the ending of the blockade. Each year, or each summer in New York, there's a concert with message rappers where they rap and talk about these issues. And we also bring rap artists here to Cuba to participate in their annual hip-hop festival.
Talk a little bit about the state of hip-hop here in Cuba.
It's growing. Well, in 1990, soon after I got here, I was in one of their... during that time in the summer, they would have outdoor concerts and just music playing and for the youth. And when I first went there, I was just so impressed. And all I could think of was that it would really be nice if my son could come and be a part of this, because I would go there and I would see African Cuban brothers with X's in their hair, with Malcolm shirts on, and you know, they'd be playing rap music, and it was all good rap music, because that's when Public Enemy was out, and so I was like really pleased with it. And what happened after that, with the whole rise of gangster rap and the negativeness of gangster rap, was transported here as well. And I guess I should be thankful for it at, to some degree, because it's really what gave the, it was the seed that started the whole idea around Black August. I think it was the third rap concert or festival here. We were, it was Asada, myself, Danny Hock, Clyde Valentine, who is from Stress Magazine, and Christina Barone, who is a freelancer, freelance writer as well. We're sitting there, and they're announcing, and it's awards night, and they're announcing the awards, and one of the groups that received the award was Three Brothers. They accepted the award and says, we have a song dedicated to Malcolm. And so all of us in our group were like, yay, go y'all, go y'all, go y'all. And they started singing, and it was, you know, it takes me 3 times to understand rap in English, so you can imagine in Spanish. You know, so I'm listening to it, and I'm trying to get it. And it was so, it was positive, and I liked it until we got to the chorus. And it was, the chorus was, a nigga like you, a nigga like you, I want to be a nigga like you. And all of us like, oh no, you cannot call Malcolm a nigga. But it was the influence of our music back home. So, I mean, I had the opportunity to talk to the group, and they had a justifiable reason for the chorus. And they said, you know, white people always call Malcolm a nigga. And if he's a nigga, we want to be a nigga too. And I'm like, I understand what you're saying, brothers, but you just don't call Malcolm a nigga. So with that came, like I said, a whole not a generation, a whole period where rappers were just totally imitating rappers back home and the negative part of our rap culture. And I was disappointed. However, it's taken a turn where it reminds me of the early days of rap music, where, you know, we're talking about relevant issues that pertain to what's on our mind. And culturally, it's not being influenced by the United States at all. They're using their own music. They're developing their own way of dress, their own expression. So it's growing. And like I said, it's growing up to be a beautiful child.
And that was Nahanda Abiodun speaking in Havana about her involvement with hip-hop and Black August. I wanted to bring into the conversation Kofi Taha. He is the U.S. organizer of Black August and a writer on hip-hop. And Kofi, I wanted to ask you what it takes to organize a festival like this and what kind of interest it has drawn here in New York.
Well, good morning. The shows here in New York have been wildly successful. We haven't had to worry about some of the constraints that Pablo spoke about earlier. We had our first benefit concert in 1998 at Tramps, and we had our second benefit last year at the Bowery Ballroom, both state-of-the-art facilities, and so we didn't have those kinds of challenges. The interest in Cuba is very high. People's enthusiasm about the idea of linking hip-hop culture to political prisoners and political issues was very well received. So we really didn't have those kinds of challenges. And the participation from artists was also very high. We had Common, Black Star, Dead Prez, Sarah Jones, Rock Goddess, Gil Scott-Heron, The Roots, Poet Mark Pessa, DJ Tony Touch, Danny Hock. There were a whole range of people in this collective effort by Stress Magazine and the Malcolm X grassroots movement.
How would you define, Kofi Taha, hip-hop?
Hip-hop? Well, that's a huge question. I would say we're talking about a way of life now. We're talking about something that emerged as a counterculture here in the United States, although it was the coming together of a lot of international forces, people from the Caribbean, African influences, influences from Latin America. It encompassed an art form. We call it graffiti, meaning a visual art form. It encompassed a musical form. We call that hip-hop music. Within that, there were components of rapping and DJing. And it was a physical form of dance. We talked about breaking or breakdancing. And then there are all kinds of, those are the traditional four elements of hip-hop. But then we talk about the way people dress, the way people speak. And unfortunately, the original counterculture and the political origin of hip-hop kind of got left out. And that was when you throw away young people and you tell them that they have no voice, you take away their art programs in school, you take away their political voice, and you tell them you have nothing to say, well, we just wouldn't take that. And so what you see here in the United States is a rise in youth expression. And so we at Black August, the Black August Collective, we focus on that. We focus on hip-hop as a means for young people to express themselves, whatever, in whatever way they're trying to express themselves. And as we go to international hip-hop scenes in Cuba, in Brazil, in South Africa, in Ghana, in Japan, you will see that young people there are expressing themselves in a way that the dominant culture does not necessarily appreciate. But when it's sincerely done and not driven by market forces, as it has become here in the United States, it is a very, very powerful voice.
Well, in a few minutes in the next segment, we're going to bring in some rappers from Havana who will be freestyling for us and doing a little bit of rap. But I wanted to ask Pablo Herrera, a Cuban hip-hop producer in La Habana, poet and linguist. Pablo, I would like to get also your definition of hip-hop, particularly because it's music that is usually associated with dissent. There is a tremendous question and general concern about the future of the new generation of Cubans. And could you talk a little bit about your definition and also some of the key messages that Cuban rappers bring into their music?
Well, I could say that that for me and for most of the people here in Havana, I think that, first of all, let me speak about the themes that you talk about. You talk about things that that concern with society. And when I say society, I say, you know, what's going on in their lives, like with their parents, like what's going on in their lives as to, like, how they see the reality of Cuba, how it's changing, what's wrong about it, what's good about it. And they talk about, you know, just issues of religion that they mentioned too. There's issues of, you know, say, problems like prostitution, they might mention it too. Issues of, you know, racism, they mentioned that. But I think, and this is the most important thing, I think, the hip-hop, as it is right now, and as we have received it from the United States, as you know, in its pure form, for me and for many rappers in Havana, my definition is that it is the the vehicle to bring awareness to Cuban youth and bring awareness to Africa, our Afro-Cuban youth to express themselves and find a way and a space to create our own, you know, their own voice. I think that also hip hop is in many ways the new voice of the youth, and it's in many ways also it is also at the avant-garde of the thinking in the youth of Cuba, because it's actually once again reflecting in a new way the things and issues that the youth is dealing with in Cuba, and not only the youth but just the whole country, how our reality is. I think that's my definition.
Let's go to a cut of a piece that you produced and Miguel Carlos also produced, executive producer here in the United States. Maria, maybe you can tell us the name of it, and then Pablo could give us a context for it.
Well, it's called El Mundo Va a Acabarse, The World is Going to End, by Reyes de la Calle, which means the kings of the street. And it deals with racism in Cuba.
Ave María, Ave María. Yo veo a la gente como rezan con locura, y al tipo que le reza no aparece ni en pintura. Muchas personas que han oído al Señor, pero lo cierto es que nadie ha visto a Dios.
El mundo va a acabarse.
La gente como pide porque están obstinados. Yo digo esto porque aquí hay acomplejado. Una tonta de racista, una vida descarado. Que van a la iglesia y están fanatizados. Se pasan.
Pablo, could you tell us a little bit about what this song says?
I couldn't hear it. Well, it's okay. Well, the song talks about, it's talking, basically the chorus says, well, the world is going to, it's about to end. What about we find out that when God comes down to earth, he's a black man with big lips and big eyes and, you know, Afroid features. And I think that what the song is basically talking about or addressing is the issues of major prejudice that there is in Cuba among people of, you know, Spanish descent and African descent. I think that what the song is talking about is the prejudice that's our heritage from, you know, 400 years and of slavery and years of, you know, of the past regime and capitalism where people, you know, maintain that whole racism and now and how it persists in Cuba as part of a global issue, which is, you know, racism, you know, all over the world. I think that the way they're actually talking about it is that we actually need to, or people who are racist and prejudiced in Cuba need to get rid of and look at people, black people, in the way that they, just to understand that they also are, you know, people like themselves and they're have a right to express themselves. And I think that the song basically is like it's like a farce of how stupid it is to act like that, how stupid it is to be racist and prejudiced about, you know, black people or just in general people of color.
De los racistas envueltos en su furor, se dieron cuenta que le rezan a un negrón y que la raza superior o inferior es un gran error y que el mismo hizo un viejo a padecer todas las verdades, que no aguanto el engaño, su hijo era moreno aunque lo pinten castaño, era un judío aunque muchos de su raza en este mundo.
And that is El Mundo Va a Acabarse, The World Is Going to End by Reyes de la Calle. I wanted to bring into the conversation Raquel Rivera. She's a journalist who covers hip-hop and also participates in Black August. Raquel, could you tell us a little bit about women and hip-hop?
Well, I've been really impressed comparing the scene in Cuba with the one in the States and in Puerto Rico, where the role of women is so limited, not only in terms of participation and the number of women involved, but also at the quality of the participation. And down there in Cuba, it's a lot more women involved at all levels. And also, the way in which women participate is not limited to the cute girl with the short skirt and, you know, it doesn't matter how you rhyme or, well, dance, it does matter, but it doesn't matter how you rhyme, it just matters how you look. And over there, even though the expectation that women have to be sexy and have to portray a certain image is still current. But as Kofi said before, since it's not primarily market-driven like in the U.S. and Puerto Rico, then women actually have more space to express themselves.
Raquel, we're going to take a little listen to a women's hip-hop group in Cuba.
This is Instinto.
Quirino con su tres, ay, Quirino con su tres. Quirino, Quirino, Quirino con su tres. Quirino, Quirino, Quirino con su tres.
Oye, Quirino, toca tu tres, que desde arriba tú vas a ver que todo el mundo aquí te tararea.
And that is the group Instinto, a song called Quirino con su tres. It's about a Cuban dancer called Mercedes Valdez.
And you are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! As we talk about busting the embargo today with culture between Cuba and the United States, and particularly talking about hip-hop. When we come back, we'll continue our bi-country conversation with rappers in Cuba as well as producers here in the United States. You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! We'll be back in a minute.
Thank you.
You are listening to Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman here with Maria Carrion, and no matter how hard the U.S. government tries to stop any kind of commerce going between the United States and Cuba and communication between the United States and Cuba in this more than 40 years of the U.S. embargo against Cuba that was strengthened by the Helms-Burton Amendment, and also as tensions increase with the Elian Gonzalez case coming to a head, his father now in the United States in Washington, D.C., waiting to once again, retrieve his son and take him home to Cuba. We're talking about what Elian, a culture that Elian may become a part of, who knows, in Cuba as he grows up. And it's the hip-hop culture that is taking hold not only in Cuba, but here in the United States. I'm Amy Goodman with Maria Carrion, producer of Democracy Now!, who's just returned from Cuba and done a little tour of hip-hop culture there. Maria.
Raquel, we were just speaking with you before the break, and I wanted to just ask you a quick question about women and sex and tourism. A lot of male rappers sing about women and sex and tourism and prostitution. What is the situation, and what are female rappers saying about this?
Raquel Rivera is a journalist who covers hip-hop and is a participant in the Black August Project.
Well, pretty much all the rappers aim a criticism at women that sell their bodies for sex, especially with tourists. But from what I've seen, it's more the male rappers doing the criticizing. And I mean, it's a very valid criticism. But at the same time, it's really interesting that that's one of the way that young women in Cuba, I mean, the sex industry, that young women in Cuba have seen as a way of getting things that they usually don't have access to. And it's the men who are feeling threatened by that industry with reason. But I think there's some interesting stuff lurking in there.
Well, this is we're going to play a little bit of that. It's by the Orishas again. And about sex tourism in Cuba. Well, this song talks about how, as tourism, the tourism influx is bigger and bigger in Cuba. A man watches as his girl is wooed by a tourist. The tourist gives her everything she asks for, but at the end, he gets no sex in return. The chorus says, "This happened to you because you didn't know that everything has a price, you daredevil." Cámara silente, para un estúpido, tupido cliente, que de vivo el punto mira se las daba. Estaba, andaba vigilando a la criolla de carnada. Eso te pasó por no saber que todo tiene su precio. Atrevido, eso te pasó. Atrevido, eso te pasó por no saber que todo tiene su precio. Atrevido, eso te pasó por no saber. Atrevido, y el punto se tiró de gil. Well, we're also joined in La Habana, and actually outside of La Habana, from Alamar, by Julio Cárdenas and also Johan. They're rappers from the group RCA, Raperos Crazy Alamar. welcome to Democracy Now!, Julio and Johan. I wanted
good morning.
Hello. Wanted to ask you to do a few lines from your rap Jinetera, if you could, and then translate them for us as you're doing them. Joan, estoy pidiendo que por favor hagan una rima de jinetera y que luego Julio lo traduzca.
Okay. Dice, salió una mañanita en busca de un empleo, con ganas de satisfacer a todos sus deseos. Yeah. De todas sus amigas ya es la única que queda, what? Luchando en esta vida y esperando una salida para afuera. La niña cogió carretera y no le importó lo que su familia dijera. Nunca se imaginó encontrar la suerte así tan fácil, parada en una esquina y esperando por su taxi.
Wow,
aquí está todo garantizado. La pecha, la jama, el faste y el fao. Ya su novio no le importa que le digan el venado. Su abuelita mete un grito, pero tiene dinerito que de todo le han comprado.
Money, tiene mucho money. ¿A quién vienes a comprar ahora tú con tanto money? Todo lo resuelve con un poke full y un estéreo Sony.
De donde sea, eso es para que tú veas la vida como cambia y las personas como se personajean. Cuando pastean, yo, a veces duro estar con alguien que uno no desea, pero para ella la pobreza es demasiado fea.
Okay.
These songs talk, okay?
Yes, could you explain what this
Terrific.
Is about? Jinetera is a prostitute in Cuba.
Yeah, that is no was my first intention in this song. No offense to like prostitution to the, all the girls, all the women in Cuba. Was like inspiration from one girl in my neighborhood, you know, so pretty, so young, and she all the time thinking material things. She sings so fast, you know, and that talking about in this song that this girl one day decides go to the street and take and stop one taxi, you know, one tourist taxi, and the problem is in her life. Made her life is more easy, more but no working, no go to the school, no study, you know, and it's not like Hinatera. It's like the name of the song is like artificial flower. It's like the way she so when she came back to the Italian, you know, she forgot all her roots, you know, and
Julio, let me ask you something. You're a rapper in Cuba from the group RCA, Raperos Crazy Alomar, where you come from outside Cuba, I mean outside of Havana. We were having this conversation that you've been listening to in the hour about how there are certain sort of threads of hip-hop that have been sexist and can be racist as well. What about the hip-hop in Cuba? Where do you see it going? What you're doing? Do you feel you have a mission?
Well, we started this like was in the Bronx, breakdancing in the streets, rapping on the bus. But here is very different, you know. We got another system, another society, another way to see the things. But anyways, now everybody likes hip hop here. Everybody feel this culture, and we feel very proud because you can see how much people follow us, and they feel love and respect for us. That's the principal inspiration, you know. And, we don't have resources, we don't have promotion. But you can see how we can make a festival, a big festival with the help from people from the United States. And maybe in the future, things going to be better, you know. And we talking about in our songs about the reality, everybody talking about the reality of the problem with the rappers, and the police, for example, can stop you three times in the day for the way you wear your clothes and your hair, you know, you cut hairs, and we are trying to survive, and I know that in the future we can win the triumph. About hip-hop in Cuba.
Julio, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Alomar. Why you think, first of all, that so many hip-hop artists from Cuba are coming out of Alomar, and what reality is like there? What is life like in Alomar?
Why there's more people?
Why there is so much hip-hop coming out of Alomar?
Oh, oh my God, that is an interesting question. I think that it was many years ago. Alomar have the most young people in all Ciudad Habana, and that when this kind of culture began in Cuba, breakdancing, rapping, many people from Alomar, from Guanabacoa, from Central Habana, loved this. But this new generation begin to growing up. This kind of culture here, you know, the children in the street rapping, and everybody can get a radio station from Miami. Everybody can get informed more than the other people, you know, and from the rest of Havana. Everybody like La Moña. Everybody like hip hop. Everybody can get from channel from Miami before, and that's the reason. Now this is the city of the majority people, of the, you know, came to the concerts. That's the reason Grupo Uno made all years the festival here in Alamar. And there's many dope rappers too.
Miguel Carlos, a hip-hop producer here in New York who's compiled the first CD of Cuban hip-hop. Talk a little bit about your experience in Alamar. Describe Alamar for us.
Well, Alamar, it's a cool place. You have to go through a long tunnel to get there, and when you come out, it's a suburb of Havana. It's, I guess, a little bit like Far Rockaway. It's a ghetto on the ocean. And that's where the hip-hop is growing up, for sure.
We're also joined by Coquino. He is a rapper from the group Anónimo Consejo, who you heard earlier, Anonymous Advice. He's in La Habana. Coquino, I wanted to ask you, first of all, you introduced your song at the concert by beginning to talk about a killing in New York City that you'd heard about, the Patrick Dorisman killing. Could you talk a little bit about your links to the United States, how your experiences might be similar to those of Afro-Americans here in the United States? Coquino, te quería preguntar, tú introduciste tu canción el otro día en el concierto hablando del asesinato de un haitiano americano por la policía en Estados Unidos, aquí en Nueva York. ¿Puedes hablar un poco de tus conexiones? ¿Cuáles son las similitudes entre tu experiencia, la experiencia de afrocubanos, la experiencia de afroamericanos aquí en Estados Unidos? Traducirá Pablo Herrera, and Pablo Herrera will translate for us.
Bueno, mi conocimiento como rapero, ¿no? Es que nosotros, Anónimo Consejo, yo y Osmel, hacemos hip hop revolución, ¿entiendes? Entonces, más o menos como que la misión de nosotros es saber sobre todo las cosas que pasan con los negros y todos los progresistas que pasan en el mundo.
Yeah,
y pienso que...
Yeah, I have to say that me as part of the Cuban Anónimo Consejo, my mission first of all is to know about everything and be aware of everything that happens to black people in general, not just in Cuba or the United States, but in the world, and also be able to know and speak about everything that's progressive in the world.
Coquino, your rap appears to be very international as well. You have a song about Nelson Mandela called Guapo Como Mandela, or Handsome Like Mandela. Talk a little bit about that and the significance. Coquino, te quería preguntar, tienes unas conexiones muy internacionales en tu música, aparte de revolucionarias. Tienes una canción que se llama Guapo Como Mandela, sobre Nelson Mandela. ¿Puedes hablar un poquito sobre el mensaje de esa canción y cuáles son estas conexiones internacionales?
Bueno, esa canción la escribimos entre yo y mi colega Osmel. Entonces, bueno, como el nombre de ella se llama Guapo Como Mandela, ¿entiendes? Nosotros sabemos mucho. Dale.
Okay, yeah, that song was written between me and my partner, my good partner, Osmel, and it's called Guapo Como Mandela, which means a tough guy like Mandela.
Y entonces nosotros como compusimos esa canción con el aquel de que alguien cuando se meta en una historia tiene que terminarla, no tiene por qué irse, tiene que mantenerse guapo como Mandela, como supo hacerlo él, ¿entiendes?
Yeah, and in the song we wrote with the idea and the intention of making notice that when you start doing something you have to take it to the end and not drop it. Just you have to start it and take it to the end, like Mandela did with his life.
Guapos en este negocio, para que ellos sesudos no piensen que estoy mareado. Sigan robando con disimulo lo que yo escribo. Parece que la cabeza no te da para más. Mi alimento no se agota como la cuota fin de mes. Así que bota que no es compota o te viro esto al revés. Con su consaki soy taco bueno que te enreda la cabeza. Así que baila, vive y fuma. Mi letra madura, yo empleo bien la pluma. Pa' que crean en mí dentro y fuera de Cuba. En esta mecánica yo estoy pasado, tostado. Tengo el cerebro bien ajustado. Cada vez que saco algo es pa' dejarte con la boca abierta. Socome. Ay, ay, ay.
Y aquí llegué y no me voy. And that was Anónimo Consejo, Guapo como Mandela, or Handsome like Mandela.
Well, Maria, this has really been a remarkable hour as we cross the cultural divide, more political divide, as politicians try to break the communication, and Pacifica Community Radio around the country brings these voices together, as is done in Cuba and in the United States through these hip-hop festivals, despite the embargo. This is a tough end of the show, because usually we give out all sorts of phone numbers, email addresses, websites, but because of the embargo, it's tough for people to give out too much information, or they can get busted for breaking the embargo. But Kofi Taha, U.S. organizer of Black August, the Cuban hip-hop festival in the U.S. and Cuba, can you give any kind of contact?
Well, let me just say that some of the artists who have participated have been harassed by the Treasury Department. We keep receiving letters from the Treasury Department, but I would say we receive support from AfroCubaWeb.com, and if you go to AfroCubaWeb.com, there is a Black August link there. I believe the address is www.AfroCubaWeb.com/BlackAugust.html.
Well, we want to thank everyone very much for being with us for this hour. Coquino from the group Anónimo Consejo, Anonymous Advice, speaking to us from Havana, as well as Julio Cardenas, rapper from the group RCA, Raperos Crazy Alomar, speaking from Alomar just outside Havana. Pablo Herrera, Cuban hip-hop producer, poet, and linguist, also speaking to us from Havana. And, well, Miguel Carlos, or whatever you're calling yourself these days, record producer in New York, who's put together the first compilation of Cuban rap. And Kofi Taha, U.S. organizer of Black August. Raquel Rivera also was with us, journalist who covers hip-hop and a part of the Black August Project. I want to thank you all very much, and thank you very much, Maria Carrion, for putting all this together, as well as Guillermo Carrion for some of your recordings from Cuba. Democracy Now! Is produced by Maria Carrion, David Love, and also a very special thanks to Deepa Fernandez producing today. Our engineer is Matthew Finch, our technical director, Errol Maitland. I'm Amy Goodman with Maria Carrion from Pacifica Radio's Democracy Now!